to tell you all about the plants, all of the parts and how they grow. Now just sit right down and enjoy the song. Your lesson starts right now, and here we go.
When you start questioning orthodoxy, then your whole life changes.
Medicine. As dreams are the healing songs from the wilderness of our unconscious, so wild animals, wild plants, wild landscapes are the healing dreams from the deep singing mind of the earth.
You know, it's weed is kind of like a racial epithet, a plant, you know, applied to the plant world. And there's a certain amount of bad press plants get that I'm not really sure that they deserve. I think a lot of it comes down to fear of the wild more than the genuine knowledge of the plant world itself.
So is your silence when it's rooted in compliance. To stand firm in loving defiance, make archer alliance, give voice to the fire. Move people to the beat of the wind, gather yourself and begin to dance the song until it ends. We are winners, champions of the light, forming in numbers and might. Keep the truth close in its sight.
Once you get rid of your preconceptions, there's a lot of fascinating things that begin to emerge. That seem almost obvious in themselves. One of the great environmentalists, John Muir, I think it was, that said, when you pull on one thing, you find it hitched to everything else in the universe. The real world doesn't really quite match the world that human beings, or the fantasy that human beings have created about it.
Only we enjoy the fruits of, and that everything else on the planet suffers for. From our food, to our soil, to our air, to every other living thing on this planet. This civilization, this brave new world we've crafted for ourselves, does it make you happy? Do you find solace? Do you find hope? Do you find joy? Because last time I checked, depressions are at an all-time high. Meanwhile, it's been proven that just sticking your hands in dirt or staring at a natural image for 15 minutes can improve your mood, help cure depression. Yes, you've forgotten the natural world outside yourself. You've given it up for a world of business and finance, one that you don't even control. You've accepted an existence as a cog in a machine, of which you are the most minute ground into the dust part.
You know, one of the things I constantly talk about is, you know, James Hillman said we've lost the response of the heart to what's presented to the senses. And I always think that the first act of decolonization, because people need to realize we're the longest colonized. You know, they tend to think of imperialism in first world countries' colonization processes as only happening to other cultures out there, but in fact, we were colonized long ago, and the first step to the decolonization of the soul really is to reclaim the feeling sense. Like, how does this restaurant feel? How does this book feel? How does this job feel? How does this piece of furniture feel? How does this, you know, school feel? Everything over and over and over again. Because we, each of us, are born with a sense of rightness that our feeling self, it enables us to tell the difference in the meanings we encounter, and certain meanings have a resonance for us. We know where our sense of rightness tells us where true gold is to be found, and reclaiming that and beginning to follow it is really an important thing. And so I always like to finish by saying, you know, always trust your feeling sense, and don't let anybody outside of you convince you that it's not real, because that is the first step in freedom and the decolonization of the self.
Their God is better than the rest. I prefer quiet reflection. Wind in the trees, the buzz of the bees, this air that I breathe, and this pounding in my chest. Nature reigns out where the desert cactus bloom. The stars shine as bright as the silver moon, and we're all the same.
Rationality tends to be based, you know, rational behavior, although there's not much of it, but let's go into the illusion for a minute. It's based on certain assumptions about the nature of reality, and if those assumptions are wrong, then no matter how rational the behavior on top of it, it's not going to turn out well.
Nature aids. It's time to see we've got no control, neither these bodies nor these souls, and we're all the same. Nature aids.
People that live in close contact with the earth, I mean, you know, although the concept of witchcraft is fairly widely spread in cultures around the world. In general, you know, there's a certain conception of witches as engaging in sort of things that would harm other life forms, you know, other people in the community or whatever. Mm-hmm. But if you sort of get rid of that concept and you look at it, this dynamic of people that live close to the earth and have this conception of everything as alive, each of them then sort of becomes a channel for some of that life force to flow through them into the human community. And no matter how much people in the Western world have tried to suppress that, it's not something that can be suppressed. It's exactly like weeds growing through a sidewalk. It keeps breaking through this sort of enforced, you know, monocentric rigidity and emerging of its own accord back into the human species. And those people have kept it alive, even though they've been marginalized as astrologers or tarot readers or herbalists or whatever. But there's something, that stuff remains because it's one of the few accesses to soul that people in the Western cultures have. And at this point, it's starting to really break through that old rigidified framework and blossom everywhere. And so I tend to think of it as more, I like the term wise women are, you know, the people that are into simples, that it's got less of a edge to it than witches do. And
right.
Just my personal preference. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know, I heard that translation of the Bible that says, thou shalt not suffer a witch to live, the actual translation was, thou shalt not suffer a caster of evil spells to live.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes a huge difference in the way it's interpreted mm-hmm. at that point in time.
Air my breath and fire my spirit, earth my body, water my blood. Air my breath and fire my spirit, earth my body, water my blood. Air my breath and fire my spirit, earth my body, water my blood. Air my breath and fire my spirit, earth my body, water my blood. Air my breath and fire my spirit, earth my body, water my blood. Air my breath and fire my spirit, earth my body, water my blood.
To the god of the wood. Will you meet me in the thick wood where the shadows shine and the sunlight falls so thin it leaves no record on the wind? Will you walk in the tall trees where the whispers walk, where I've heard you wail? Will the fury of a sudden breeze make your name a crazy call? In groves where light can never reach, will you become the sound of birds? And when my silence is my speech, will you remove my need for words? God of the woods with the laughing eyes, you are a world of pale stars and a purple sky beneath the wildness of the night. You are the tears of dead bards who whispered sadly when you smiled. You are my years of wasted words. So come and walk with me a while. Dark-haired, bright-eyed, drunken god, your hard face, your beast-like walk, our world has grown to need your grace. It is no longer time for talk. Though in your eyes there is no time, or world, or sight, but only space. Though hints of holy rage and crime distort the joy that lights your face, yet hearts are known by what they love, and peoples by the creed they serve. And this time, more than any time, should have the God that it deserves.
Simply by choosing to immerse oneself in the herbal world, one begins to, just by mere existence, run into conflict with the dominant reductive medicalistic paradigm that surrounds us every day of our lives. And that forces a lot of self-examination in and of itself. But to even go further, if you start to really experience the plant world as intelligent and alive and constantly adapting and innovating and moving, that there's this constant flow of communication and change running through the ecosystems all of the time, then it gets even more pronounced, because we are at a time that human beings have been through many times before, for various reasons, but we're at a point where one dominant paradigm is failing, it's ending, and a new one is beginning to emerge.
Scientific perspective at this point, that we know that plants feel, experience, and express. And when you get to a more subjective experience, even just growing a garden, you can see how different plants have different personalities, and how they communicate with each other. You know, a lot of the more recent science stuff about how plants a lot of times aren't competing the way we thought they have been, but rather working in symbiosis through the bacteria in the roots and the soil and giving each other messages of, okay, you grow more, I'll grow less for this season, but next season I grow more and you grow less, and how so many plant relationships are, you know, very codependent, which is why a whole ecosystem is so important. And then when people come into that, I feel like often the plants are also trying to tell us things, and that, you know, to really understand that, we have to be more plugged in. And I'm not talking about people with, or putting people personalities on plants necessarily. I'm not talking about little cartoon plants that talk to you like in, you know, kids' movies, but rather to appreciate their own kind of otherness of being alive and being sentient, but not necessarily like us.
Right.
And so if we can recognize that, that we can be open to a lot more of what they're communicating to us in different ways, you know, through taste, through touch, through simple observation. I mean, if you've ever been to the Southwest in the middle of the summer and the heat's glaring down and it's frying everything around you, and then you go down to a river where there's cottonwoods growing and you lay under a cottonwood, and the whole quality of the air changes. And all of a sudden everything's cooler and wetter, and it has this amazingly sweet, relaxing smell. And of course there's scientific explanations for all of that, for all of the chemical process. But, you know, if we can lay there and think, you know, what's it telling me? What's this tree giving me? What kind of gift am I receiving? Then I think if we can look at it from that perspective, then we understand and can work with the plants on a whole different level.
I've been here 24 years now, and I'm just so impressed with how North American herbalism has not just been reborn, but created anew. Not the old stuff come back. The old stuff came back and then flowered into something new. Mm-hmm. So we have Susan Weed type traditional herbalism. We have cutting edge medical herbalism, as is going on in the Thai Sophia school. There's Rosemary Gladstar folk herbalism, which I think all Western herbalism, herbalists need to be at home in that stuff before they get clever. Because clever herbalism is always weaker than traditional herbalism. I just pissed off most of my friends by saying that. But unless we have that kitchen sink knowing about herbs in us, anything we try and get clever with, we miss the point. We end up blowing it the way the researchers keep blowing it when they're looking at herbs.
I believe in bending backward and extending my trap strip back into the messages and action. The artist feeding stops dark, the disbelieving, cause the garden holds the shards, the medicine is in the seeds. When we hold tight to our right to protect, and we know our might is tenfold in connection. Our elders hold them bright lights, we protect them. The medicine is evident, the wolf, the hawk, the bear clan. We hold tight to our right to protect, and we know our might is tenfold in connection. Our elders hold them bright lights, we protect them. The medicine is evidence, the wolf, the hawk, the medicine woman, medicine man. Walking with grace, I know your face and I trust your hands. Medicine woman, medicine man. Walking with grace, I know your face and I trust your hands.
Thank you.
I was already in my mid-30s and realizing that I was having these profound experiences with the non-human world. And I went out and I started having them with plants and really having sort of dramatic experiences where I was having communication and receiving information about the plants and about their personalities and about how to, what sort of they bring into the world, and then having that validated by either reading some of the folklore or what their medicinal uses are. And so there was an excitement in my life that I had never had before, which was, I'm real, I exist, I'm communicating, I'm alive. And so I was developing a level of self-worth and sort of agency in my own life that I could only credit towards the plants and how they were showing up. And so getting to this interaction with Rosemary was sort of a process. I had been studying the plants for about a year. I had had really intense experiences with plants such as nasturtium, rabbit tobacco, which revolutionized my understanding of plants in and of themselves, having their own agency and their own mission in the world. This was a plant that told me that it was, that I couldn't harvest it because it was ministering to the plants in its own community, and that it was acting as the medicine plant for the plants in the community around it. And so it really didn't need to become cough syrup for humans or some type of aromatic smoke for humans, because it had a very important job to do. And that had so shifted me that I knew that I was interacting with plants in a way in which they had their own agency and their own purpose and their own existence and their own spiritual life and their own community, which didn't even need to involve the human world, and yet we share the planet, so obviously we're interacting. And I was in a state of total overwhelm, ecstatic overwhelm and revolution.
The spirit of the plants has come to me in the form of a beautiful dancing green woman.
The spirit of the plants has come to me.
Even too, we don't expect our dog to come up to us and start, you know, telling us that they want this and this for supper, but they certainly have very clear ways of communicating what they do want to us. And I think that's true for most living things, that if we're just paying attention to each other, to the earth, to the plants, to the animals, then we'll become more and more aware of that.
It's all alive. It's all connected. It's all intelligent. It's all relatives.
spirit of the plants has come to me in the form of a beautiful dancing ringwoman. The spirit of the plants has come to me in the form of a beautiful dancing ringwoman. Her eyes fill me with peace. Her dance fills me with peace. Her eyes fill me with peace. Her dance fills me with peace.
Rosemary, Rosmarinus officinalis, is a carminative, antispasmodic, antidepressive, rubefacient, antimicrobial emmenagogue. In addition to its carminative and digestive properties, rosemary can have a stimulating effect on the circulation.
I decided that I was going to get to know this plant rosemary that we were going to have as connective and exciting of a relationship as I had learned to develop with some other plants. And, you know, this is one that I would kind of rub and say hi to every day going to and from my little balcony, and felt that obviously we would have this connective relationship. So when I decided, I was like, oh, I'm ready to get to know rosemary. I brought my little notebook down and I brought an offering. I brought some cornmeal and I brought some organic tobacco and I brought some really overpriced water shipped in from who knows where that I had bought at Whole Foods. You know, I was trying to do everything right. And so I made my offerings and I sat down next to Rosemary and I smiled at her and I felt my heart beating out of my chest, and I just felt like, ta-da, I'm here, share your wisdom with me. Get to know me. Tell me who you are. And I sat next to her, and it was completely silent. And this happened several times, where I would sit down next to her, ready to sort of communicate and connect, and I was behaving sort of like that, like awkward groupie that was pretending to give a lot of praise to Rosemary, but instead I was actually demanding a lot of her attention. And as I would sit there and as she would be silent, all of this stuff would come up in me. Childhood stuff, you know, I'm not worthy, and maybe I'm not doing this right, and I'm too needy, and I would start to feel really insecure, and I would start to feel really like any of the confidence that I had actually built up about this communication that I'm having with the non-human world, and coming to terms with realizing that, like, shit, I'm a witch, and I communicate in this way, and I interact with the non-human world, and that's fantastic and that's powerful, and so I must be powerful. All of that stuff and story would just fall apart into this weird sort of codependent neediness when I would sit next to Rosemary. And I would try to journal next to her, and I would try to come and act cool, and I would make offerings to her, and I would drink tea next to her, and I would go to sometimes harvest from this plant. Now, she's probably at this point 2 feet tall, hasn't flowered, and still kind of a young rosemary plant, but really one that was developing some intense, potent aromatic oils. Like, she has, where she's at, there's no shade. And so she pretty much gets the morning up to sundown sun exposure. And, you know, pretty much August through mid-November, and sometimes even up through Christmas, we're talking 80 to over 100 degree days, and definitely through the month of October, no shade, and intense over 100 degree days with the dry heat. And so, you know, the medicinal constituents that we use as herbalists, and that we call on to make shifts in human bodies are often the protective qualities of a plant that really have nothing to do about humans. It's just literally their own protective capacities. And so these intense, rich, sort of like deep, dark, but also sort of like bright aromatic oils that rosemary produces is her own protection. And so this was a very potent plant, even for her young age. And so I'm sitting next to her. Probably I tried for several weeks and just would become a codependent, crumbling, insecure mess around her. And that really shook me to my core in a lot of ways. That really made me feel like what I was becoming to know about myself and these new sort of things I was coming to embrace about myself was a bunch of bullshit. And I started to believe it was a bunch of bullshit. And then I would go back into the trails and the plants that I was taking care of in other places, and I would have these really great experiences. And so at some point it clicked for me, and I was like, maybe rosemary just really doesn't like you, because it's not like every plant is designed to respond to me per se, and maybe rosemary just doesn't like you. And for some reason I was so relaxed in that realization.
But also, it became interesting to me, gee, medicinal plants do something in the ecosystem besides waiting around for us to use them. They're actually doing medicinal healing of all of the other things that are out there, all of the animals and the trees and everything. And that began to drop me really deep into this dynamic of direct human-plant communication. And as I looked back at interviews with indigenous peoples who had never had exposure to white perspectives or, you know, European perspectives, every one of them, doesn't matter what continent, what place, what time, they all said the same thing when they were asked, where did you get your knowledge of plant medicines? They said, from the plants themselves. It was in kind of a dream state, and the plant told us. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, this is really interesting. And that kind of began a 20-year journey of being very focused on that particular dynamic of what I call biognosis, the extraction of knowledge directly from the world without going through linear reductionism or trial and error.
Hey, listen. Behind the rattle and rumble of these slow fumes. Hey, listen. Beneath the concrete floor. Thank you.
And so I decided to actually start sitting next to her and not trying to get anything out of her, but really just sit next to her and kind of be like, you know, that person when you take public transportation or you walk into a party, that person that sort of sparks your eye, but maybe you never end up conversing with them. You just can tell, oh, there's something about them. They're neat. They're cool. They shine in some capacity that actually you can recognize. And so I just decided to treat Rosemary like that, like this cool chick that was in my neighborhood. And so I backed off a lot and I started sitting probably within about 3 feet of her at the base of my stairs to my apartment. And I would journal or do my to-do list for the week or talk on the phone. And that went on for a few weeks till I finally sort of sat next to her one day, but really didn't need anything from her. Like was literally sitting next to her just to sit next to her and wasn't really paying any attention to her at all. And I sort of sunk into myself, and I think I was thinking about something herbally related, and all of a sudden she says to me, "Hey." "Hey." And I looked over at her and I was like, "What? Hey." "What?" She says, "Do I blow in the wind?" And the funny thing was, is I wasn't actually suddenly overwhelmed. I didn't have those waves of, oh my God, Rosemary's finally talking to me, and that means I'm special. And, you know, none of that really sort of prepped up. I really just sort of looked at her, and I gazed deeply at her needles, her leaves. I mean, they look like, you know, they're little needles as opposed to sort of what we think of as leaves. And it actually happened to be a somewhat breezy day that day. I can still get actually some breeze off of the sea, which would be very familiar with Rosemary because she's a Mediterranean plant that survived long sunny days near the sea in the Mediterranean. So she says to me, like, "Hey, do I blow in the wind?" And I really just gaze at these beautiful needle-esque leaves and her structure, and I suddenly have this overwhelming feeling of both stillness and movement and sort of calm and excited at the same time. And I just said, "Well, no, you really don't blow in the wind." And if I could give you sort of an energetic feeling of, like, you know, what happened next, it would be like that sort of like smirk. And when somebody like shrugs their shoulders and sort of smirks at you. And she was just like, "Exactly." And kind of energetically retreated back into her own space. And I was fucking blown away. Just blown away. So that's my relationship with Rosemary. That's, in some ways, she was the plant that sort of taught me to have a level of autonomous ownership over how I approach another plant and how I approach using a plant in spell working. And the funny thing is that's actually just one of the lessons that she has to teach. She's just sort of a badass, self-owned, self-aware, doesn't need kudos from anyone type of plant who appreciates other badasses and will help show up and do some badassness with you in your spell. Not for you, but with you. And I think that's so awesome. Like, how can you not be in love with the world or plants or magic or any of that after knowing that. So I'm sort of internally in awe and in gratitude of her for that lesson. She helped me grow up a little bit and be my own woman, be my own person, be my own witch. And that's badass. That's really badass.
Well, we're reaching the end of the age of reason, our rationality. And, you know, a lot of people have a knee-jerk thing about what that means. But really what happened is during the Enlightenment, you know, reason or rationality emerged as this sort of counterweight to dogmatic religion. And so this other way of knowing that you didn't have to sort of take things on faith began to emerge. But what the rationalists of our time miss, and most of the people who've been, you know, infected by that frame of reference miss, is that during the Enlightenment, they didn't throw out intuition or imagination or common sense or the ability of human beings to feel. It was, all of those human attributes were still there. They just were using reason as this one kind of approach to sort of give a different view of the world or a different path. But as time has gone on, the people who believe in what they call reason or rationality, they've begun to remove all of those other attributes of our humanity from that field because they felt like it was corrupting the ability of reason to observe the world. And so the thing they left out is that reason divorced from the other human attributes that we have becomes pathological almost immediately. It has no moral compass. It has no warmth. It has no capacity to love. It's just sort of an organic computing process. And the more that that began to happen, the more damage unrestrained reason or dissociated mentation began to do to the world around us, not only the exterior world, but our interior worlds. And so, and you can really see how it's just not working anymore. It's the system itself of thought can't maintain the complexity of the world we're in now, and it's failing everywhere in the Western world. So this dynamic of working with the living reality of things, of having the response of the heart to what's presented to the senses, there's this move into a new kind of paradigm that's emerging, and herbalism is one of those things. I mean, it's like being gay in the 50s. It forces you out of this sort of comfortable framework of culture and into self-examination and to examination of the culture itself and its failings. So yeah, this thing forces a kind of activism. Now, many people are fairly minimal in their activism, but for me, it became a primary means or doorway through which to focus my activism in the world.
And then I promise you, you'll dream a different story altogether. I promise you, you'll dream a different story.
Hey you, oh, hey yeah, hey you, oh, hey you, hey yeah, yeah you. Thank you.
sweet enchanted fade away to the night, fade away, my enchanted one, rest your emerald eyes. Hey, oh, hey, hey, yeah. Hey, hey, oh.
One of the neat things about herbalism, at least when the time I got into it, was that it had really been sort of the neo-herbal movement in North America had been formed by a lot of eccentrics and outriders and people that didn't really fit any place else. And it was coming out of the 60s, and a lot of the people, as a matter of fact, all of them, as far as I could tell, of those early people, had taken a lot of LSD or psilocybin or mescaline or smoked a lot of marijuana, and they sort of had this interesting connection with the plant world because of that.
Hey, oh,
the people used to sing. The anthropologists have said to plants and animals that they had need to take. But here I am in modern times, and no amount of whole wheat bread can bridge the chasm between me and the twigs I break. So now that I've found you, I've got to try to introduce myself to you. Oh, I'm not very bright, but according to this book I read, you might contain some properties to make me feel better. God knows I've never felt right, not quite, and I'm trying to be polite, and I try to do the decent good, and Gary Snyder says I should give something of a nicety that isn't tossed off or right. So here goes. I am an ordinary guy with an awful lot of needs, both imagined and real. And when I saw you in a clump of what I used to think were weeds, I had to tell you just how I feel. Oh, I'm not the kind of guy who could rip a plant out of the ground and sell it by the pound. That's tacky. I just need a sprig. It's not very big. Take it from the bottom so your top will get bigger. I am pleased to meet you, helpful medicinal plant. You know, honey man, I don't know if I'm the kind of person that knows about wildcrafting and medicinal plants, or if I'm just the kind of person who wants to think he's the kind of person who knows about these things and is trying to cultivate a certain false public image. I won't tell anyone where you're growing. I am an ordinary guy with an awful lot of needs, both imagined and real. And when I saw you in a clump of what I used to think were weeds, I had to tell you how I feel. Oh, I'm not the kind of guy a plant out on the ground and sell it by the pound. No, ma'am, I just need a sprig. It's not very big. I'll take it from the bottom so your top will get bigger. I am pleased to meet you.
trying to free your mind, but I can only show you the door. You're the one that has to walk through it.